Welcome to the AI and Data-Driven Leadership Podcast, the show where we spotlight the innovators and leaders who are transforming the future using the power of data and AI. I'm your host, Dean Gaeta, author, podcaster, and founder and CEO of Infogistics and Slingshot. We're living in an exciting era, a time where builders, leaders, and entrepreneurs are using data and AI to fuel unprecedented growth, create groundbreaking products, and drive meaningful transformations in their industry. If you're ready to learn from some of the brightest minds and uncover actionable insight to take your business to the next level, you're in the right place. And if you have a story to share, stick around until the end of the show. We'll tell you how you can become our next guest and inspire leaders around the globe. Welcome to the AI Data-Driven Leadership Podcast. Let's dive in. All right. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. I have Walter Crosby here, CEO of Helix Sales Development, and really happy to have you on. You're very focused on helping entrepreneurs really go from like a sales leader, entrepreneur, owner of the company to really put effective sales organization in place so that they could spend less time worrying about sales and more time enjoying life and running their business at a different level. But Walter, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself to, and then we can kind of kick it off.
I appreciate the opportunity, Dean. I'm a sales guy at heart, 40 years in selling everything from dirt to smoke and mirrors,
I've never met anyone that sold dirt, but so you're first.
Yeah, well, it's a thing. My goal is to elevate the sales profession, and I'm focused on helping that business owner, do the hard work of getting out of the sales seat, right? A lot of founders who have started their company, they talked about it naturally, and then they have a hard time translating what they did without thinking to a sales team so they can get the hell out of the sales department and go back and run the business and do what they intended to do. But that's really my focus.
Yeah, I mean, sales is, of course, so important. And so it's not easy to build a sales organization, even when you know what you're doing and having, professionals do it. So you look for like founder run, you mentioned EOS run companies and to build these stronger sales organizations. So what are the biggest signals that a company's sales engine is still too dependent on a founder?
When they got to be there to close a deal, right? When the salespeople are coming to them, asking them for a discount, when they come in, they're asking the founder, the CEO to come in and help them close. That's a sign. So I'm really focused on kind of referring myself as a sales integrator, right? So helping that EOS company who's, in the distribution and construction space, right? People that have been commoditized, they have a great product, they got a great offering, they got a great team, and their buyers are commoditizing them. And they need to find the right words to use, the right story to tell, and then teach that to their salespeople. And then, of course, they need to have salespeople who can sell value, right? That are not just out there pitching features and benefits, which is what a lot of salespeople end up doing because they don't know how to do the job well. So you're a data guy, right? 6% of all of the salespeople out there are what we call elite. And then there's 14% that are good. And that 20% are who you're really looking for. And then there's another 20% that's above average, if you're generous with average, right? And then the rest just run, right? We don't want them on our team. And that data has been consistent for almost 30 years. And there's plenty of data to back that up. So, I'm trying to help them build the fundamentals, right? You can't build the house, can't make a beautiful kitchen and a nice man's cave and a great living room without having a strong foundation to build on. So we do the hard work of creating those fundamentals for that business owner. Because you made the point a minute ago that it's tough. It's really tough to build a sales organization that can you can just dump gasoline on and let it grow. So you need those fundamentals in place.
Yeah, absolutely. And so when you go into an organization and you probably CEOs will say, yeah, I have a sales problem, but is it really a sales problem? Is it, accountability or systems problem or, leadership problem? How do you diagnose the root cause of all that?
Well, there's a couple of things. It's funny. A guy called me last week and said, "Hey, I need sales training." I go, "Okay, what makes you think you need sales training?" Well, our close ratios have dropped, right? Which is great, right? He knew
Yeah.
that his close ratios were 40% and now they were 30%. And I go, "Okay, so what makes you think it's that they don't know how to close?" Right? Same sales team, yeah, exact same people. All right. So what makes you think it's a closing problem now? So we had a conversation in about 15 minutes. We diagnosed that sales manager had decided that the pipeline should be five times the value of what they need to produce. So they needed $5 million a quarter. So this guy wanted $5 million at all times in the pipeline. So what did the salespeople do? They started stuffing deals in there, right? Instead of doing what they had been doing. 40% is respectable close rate. So they started stuffing deals in there that were just hope, just to satisfy what the sales manager wanted. And it just caused their close rate to plummet. It caused discord within the organization. People were like, why am I not winning deals? And, we literally had a 15-minute conversation, and I'm like, that's the problem. You don't need training. And I could have done training and got paid well. It was the wrong move.
Yeah.
So we engaged in changing some things with the sales manager. So sometimes the diagnosis is pretty simple, but think about it this way: if you go to the doctor because your right knee hurts and it's been hurting you for a while, the doctor doesn't say, "Hop up on the table and let's do some surgery this afternoon," right? They ask you some questions, they run some tests, they might do some X-rays, maybe an MRI. And then what do they find out? Your hip on the left side is falling apart and you've been walking weird. So it puts pressure on your knee and it's causing the pain when the problem is over there on the other side in another joint. So, we can do MRIs on salespeople, start to understand, do they have the will to sell? Do they have the sales DNA? What competencies are they missing? So we look at data to help the entrepreneur understand where the real problem is. And if you assess the right things and you work on the right things, then you can actually solve a problem.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, yeah, being data driven is hard, and sometimes you kind of in this story you just told, the wrong or the metric actually uncovered, but some of the wrong processes and other metrics the sales leader was trying to drive. And so, yeah, that's some of the hard part about being data driven. And so if you're like a mid-market company and you're trying to scale revenue, what's the true data driven or metrics you think everyone should look at weekly?
On a weekly basis, we should be monitoring the activities and behavior of the sales team, right? Because that's going to predict what happens next. So you want to be looking out the mirror. You don't want to be looking in the mirror. You want to be looking out the windshield, just like driving a car, right? So you want to be looking at leading indicators. So that is the activity that the salespeople are doing and the results from that activity. So are they making connections with the right buyers? Are they making the calls to start? And are they making the right connections? Are they talking to decision makers? Right? Those are just a couple of the things that we should be looking at. So if they're making the right connections and they're having conversations and they're not getting anywhere, maybe they're saying the wrong things. Maybe they're pitching instead of asking great questions. We're looking at those. I mean, I'm talking about really pulling back and looking at fundamentals. There's no magic sauce here. It's really just It's like Vince Lombardi, right? Every year when he started camp, right, with all of those professional big old guys that were football players, every year he started it the exact same way. Gentlemen, this is a football, right? And he started the season talking about blocking and tackling, moving your feet. So that's what we got to do, is make sure that that's what's happening on a sales team. I say it all the time, it's not sexy, but if we're not doing the basics right, you're not going to be able to throw that, 30-yard pass down the field, right, and hit that home run if the line isn't blocking for the quarterback to have the 3.5 seconds it takes for the receiver to run down the field. The other guy's got to block and tackle. So we're looking at what those salespeople are doing, and that we're tracking the right things. So win rate's an important metric, but so is sales velocity. So is the pipeline healthy? Are they working on the right deals? Do you have a gate to get into to for a deal to enter your pipeline? Are we scoring the stages in each part of the pipeline? So I think we should have a scorecard to decide if a deal is worthy to be in the pipeline to begin with, right? So you could have a prospect who has money that has a problem, but you don't have a solution for it. It's a waste of resources. You could have a perfect ideal client, right? The right industry, the right size. You have a perfect solution, but they don't have any money. So you're wasting time. So we got to have the right scorecard for each stage of that process to make sure that we're moving things along. Deals get stuck. Why are they stuck? Before we do a proposal, you should be scoring whether or not that you're likely to get that proposal. Salespeople get excited about RFPs, right? Somebody calls them and wants them to do a quote. I hate RFPs. You have, a really low shot of winning. You didn't write it. Somebody has an advantage in that process. You might be the magical three or four company to be asked to be in it, right? And they already know who's going to win. That happens a lot. So I just rattled off a bunch of ideas there that we should be thinking about. But it's really about what the salespeople are doing every day, every week, every month to be able to analyze, what those results are.
So what's it like? Sometimes it just gets, there's a lot of transactions going on and metrics and activity, but like, and deals probably in the construction industry are longer cycle, but even if they're 2 or 3 months sales cycle, like how do you know your sales team is doing the right act, having the right outcomes in their activity? Like what metric shows you, like, when do you know to drill in, because a lot of times you look at data and you're doing your forecast call weekly and all these things, and it there's a lot of, I don't know if it's noise, but there's a lot of data in there, like how do you know, like, before it's like at the end of the quarter and someone's like way below quota, or what are those early indicators?
So I think of it this way, pipeline hygiene, right? Is your pipeline healthy? So you're looking at velocity, how quickly a deal moves through. You should know your sales cycle. It could be 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, 2 years, whatever that is. So each deal is in a stage for a period of time. If that deal is in that stage for too long, it's not making progress, it's stalled, that's a red flag. We need to look at that, right? That's just one idea in terms of what to look for. If a salesperson is jumping around and they get somebody that they think is interested, and then they go right to the demo or right to the quote or right to the proposal. And I think of it this way. You play baseball, you're at the plate, you hit the ball, you got to go to first base, then you go to second, then you go to third, right? And then you come home. You don't get to go to first and cut across the pitching mound and go to third base, right? That's not allowed. The same thing happens in sales. So you got to get to first base. You got to have that meeting. You got to get their attention. To get to second, there's some steps that you got to follow. And a big picture, do they have a compelling reason to do anything? Did you differentiate yourself from your competition? Did you monetize their problem? Right? If you do those things, then you're standing on second base. And then you want to get to third base. So what has to happen there? Some big milestones. And I'm hitting high level stuff here, right? They're more unique, but you want to understand if you're talking to the right person, the decision maker. Do you want to understand their timeline? And most importantly, you want to understand the criteria they're going to use to select, make a solution. And so do you have those things in place? Then you can decide if you should do a proposal, a demo, or a quote, depending upon where you are. So again, go back to the baseball analogy. A lot of salespeople will think, I got a live one here. They're excited. They like me. And then they just go do a quote because that's what the buyer asked for. Nobody gets paid to do a proposal. So we shouldn't want to do a proposal unless we got a pretty good probability of winning. Because a lot of bad things happen. You put your number on the street, you've spent time and resources to create that proposal. You spent time and resources with that buyer. So you want to have a likelihood of winning. So don't just go too fast. You want to slow down and make sure you got the right person. So if they have a good pipeline and there's good hygiene, they're systematically moving through your sales process at a timeline and velocity that's appropriate for your sales cycle. And you get to that point. So if you have a 3 month sales cycle, it's probably around 60, 65 days or so. That's when you should be talking about that demo, that proposal, right? As long as you know how they're going to make the decision. And then you get a chance to run home and score at that
Yeah,
point.
great. Yeah, it's good advice. And then what advice do you have around, I mean, hiring people for any role is hard. And what advice do you have around hiring salespeople? Like what should you avoid? What are some of the common mistakes? And
Let's look at it from a common mistake problem. One, they hire salespeople the same way they hire everybody else. And I think that's a mistake because salespeople are weird. We're different than an admin, an engineer, right? That anybody else in the organization, because our job is to sell, so we should be able to sell ourselves. So a lot of times salespeople are better at selling than the hiring manager. And somebody falls in love with the person's personality or where they went to school, right? I once knew a lady in HR who I graduated with from college. We talked about this off camera. I went to the University of Michigan. She worked for a major bank. If she saw a resume from somebody graduating from Notre Dame, she threw it away. She didn't even talk to them. And I'm like, I won't say her name, but I'm like, you can't do that. That's a fine institution, right? There's good people that go there. You hate them on a one football Saturday out of the year. But so there's those biases. And I think the other thing that, to keep it simple, a lot of folks will sell the company, sell the job, sell the opportunity at the beginning. And that's a mistake. We should be thinking about our candidates. And just like we would hiring a vendor, right? We want them to help us understand why they're going to help us, why that vendor, what they have, what value are they going to bring. So we should be disqualifying that candidate each step of the way, professionally, politely, right? Have a clear picture of what you're going to do, but stop selling until you find the candidate you really want, and then sell the hell out of the job, sell the company, sell the culture. But don't do that at the beginning. Do it at the end. And I think there's a way to get data on a salesperson because we want to try to keep this as objective as possible. So I've been using AI to help me analyze transcripts from interviews to create a scorecard, which I have the same scorecard, the same metrics, the same categories, and it helps me analyze if they answered the questions correctly. And I have a rating system. It takes a minute, as you know, with teaching AI to do what you want it to do, but it's one way to keep keep it as objective as possible. So we're not throwing away resumes because they went to Notre Dame.
And do you always like ask the same questions, I guess? That way you can have a scorecard and a rating system.
With the first two conversations, the questions are almost exactly the same because I want to create a baseline. The questions change based on the role and, if it's a salesperson or a sales leader. But I want to have some objectivity and some early consistency. And then what comes out of those early interviews is areas where we need to dig in and go deeper, ask better questions, ask to really understand the strengths and weaknesses of that candidate. Because there's always strengths and weaknesses. Can we tolerate the weaknesses in this role? Because you're not going to find that perfect candidate.
Right. So, like, we kind of talked about this a little bit, like, but where do you see most often, like, the sales function breakdown?
I think there's two big areas. They hire the wrong person. They're not clear about what that person needs to do. So keep it simple. If you have a role that's supposed to go find new logos, net new accounts, and you hire an account manager, right? Somebody that's great at taking existing accounts and nurturing them and going deeper and grabbing more share of wallet. Those are two different roles. So if you're not clear about what this person needs to do, you're going to get off track really fast. So that's a mistake that I see, that hiring the wrong person. And then here's a big thing that is a blind spot for business owners, especially the ones who sat in that seat of sales. They don't give the words, the message, the positioning to create the value to the sales team. So they need that, let's just call it a playbook, right? Of how to talk about the offering of the company, how to talk about the company that differentiates us from the beginning, how to handle objections. The business owner did that naturally, right? They had those feelings. Salespeople are good at selling if they're competent 20% there, that they know how to navigate discovery. They know how to navigate those conversations. But if we don't give them the words, they're not copywriters. They're
Right.
not great at marketing. So we need that congruence between what marketing says and what sales says. We need that to be congruent. But the salespeople have to be able to position that offer and create the value. And that's usually those two things are the biggest blind spots I see with that small to mid-sized market company, that they're not executing on that, and it's a constraint for growth.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And when you kind of look at a healthy sales system in a company, what are the good predictors of outcome?
From a salesperson perspective or from the systems themselves?
Just the systems themselves.
That you have a true sales process and methodology in place that's consistent, that you've created the accountability around using that system. So how do you know if you have a good system and it's being followed? It's the language that the sales team uses to talk about their pipeline. I have a deal that's in between first and second. And so, I use baseline selling as a baseline for the processes we create. So if they're talking about a deal in the stages that are in your pipeline, and they're talking about what's missing in the context of your milestones, then you have the right process and you have accountability for it. And it just that simple accountability around keeping the pipeline healthy. And you can do that in 15 minutes once a month by having a strong accountability meeting at the beginning of the month with each salesperson.
Yeah, I think as you get a sip of water, I think that's really important because otherwise you have these really fluffy conversations and it's a waste of time. So I guess I mean you could elaborate on this, but you're kind of using the same process and words and how you are, and those words tie back to stages in the sales process, and then
Exactly.
Yeah, and so you have that consistency of accountability. Is that what you're saying? And
Yeah, the accountability comes into following the process at the end of the day. Are
yeah.
they going from stage one to stage four? Are they going through the milestones of each stage and then going from one, two, three, four? Right? It's chronological. You might pick up a piece of information in your conversation that jumps ahead, but you can't jump ahead until you really understand that there's urgency, that there's a compelling reason. You can't go do a proposal without really understanding the decision maker's timeline and their criteria. So there's an order to everything, as well as a process, right? It's one, two, three, four, five. It's not one, three, two, six, right? It's you got to follow the process, and it needs to be disciplined. It doesn't need to be binary, right? We're not robots, but it does need to be fundamentally following the same process and accountability to that. And I think there's one other thing that salespeople need from their sales manager or sales leader, and that's coaching. So if you have a sales manager, that person shouldn't have their head buried in the CRM reading data every day. That's part of the job, maybe 10%. 50% of their time should be with the salespeople, coaching them, debriefing them, pre-call planning, maybe doing some ride-alongs, maybe being out there with them and letting them fail and helping them see how they failed. Not giving them answers, but asking them questions and listening for the right feedback from the salesperson. They need that. If you got a sales manager, they better know how to coach.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, over the years, we've had lots of VPs of sales and sales directors all over the world. And it's kind of hard to find, like, sometimes you get these very analytical sales leaders and they spend a lot of time on the process and the analytics. And then you get these other sales leaders who are not so good at the analytics and sales ops, and they're just they like selling, and so they're there working with the team and coaching and selling, and it's so hard to get both, you know. Do you find that, or like what's your thoughts on that?
Well, I think the VP role and the sales manager role and the salesperson role, those are three distinct roles. So what is it you want that person to do? Is the sales manager carrying a bag and out there with a, selling, or are they supporting the sales team? That VP probably has a sales manager that reports to them, and then the sales manager manages the salespeople. So to have that, that VP, if they're not just in the VP and title alone, right, they should be supporting that sales manager. They should be an architect of the sales organization, making sure that there's not too much tech, the right tech is being used, things are being followed properly. They should make sure the go-to-market strategy is correct. So sometimes that person has a title and it's not aligned with what they actually do. I've seen VPs that they carry a quota. Why are they a VP? Right? I mean, I'm old. I was taught that a title and a token get you on the subway. It's, what is it that you're supposed to do
Yeah.
every day? And I think there's misalignment there a lot and something
Yeah.
to look out for.
Yeah, and it's not consistent with every organization, your need and mapping to the title, and it's really mapping out the most effective role and responsibility and to drive sales. And yeah, so it's not one fits all.
Right. It's size of organization, the nature of the company. Like, I mean, I got hired and the guy was like, what do you want your title to be? Like, I don't need a title. Right. Well, what title do you want? CEO. Can I have that? And he's like, no, I'm CEO. I'm like, all right, just put my name on the card and the phone number, make sure it's spelt right. I don't need a title, right? They'll figure out what I do by what I'm doing. But sometimes that's important in who you're calling on. So I'm not minimizing a title, but I think in the sales world, sales director, sales manager, VP of sales, when they tell me they have that title, okay, what is it you're supposed to be doing? Not what you're doing, what is it you're supposed to be doing?
And there's some organic to this as well. Like, okay, You may have really good sales ops, and so you don't need your director, your VP to be like really heavy analytical, but they need to know how to run an organization and hire well and coach and support and fill in the
Recruit.
gaps where you're struggling and prioritize how to improve, whether it's systems, process, or go to market as you're talking about, and adjusting the competition and mess, you touch on a lot of that, but so things are so organic too. Like it depends upon who you have in your org, and so it's never just put this in place, or
Right.
just these titles in place.
That's a really good point. It's really depends upon the organization and the nature of the industry, and the size. I'm interviewing for a client for a CRO role, and they really, one of the things that they're going to have to unwind is compensation, right? So do they have experience creating a compensation plan and then taking legacy comp plans and creating a new plan and not pissing off everybody along the way, right? And transferring that. So, because the compensation plan is a set of instructions to your employees, right? If an entrepreneur thinks about that, you're telling the salespeople how to behave by how you're paying them. So if you don't have a margin perspective into your comp plan, or if you're not selling on the right units, like if you're ch charging somebody, I had a client who they were compensated on square yards sold. So they sold to maximize square yards. I changed that to dollars so that the dollars were what they were compensated on. So now they had some skin in the game to make sure the margins were right. The higher the dollar, the higher the commission, but also higher the margins were. So we changed that, and all of a sudden there was less margin pressure. Ops felt better. There was more capacity, right? Because we were aligned. Everybody was on the same page. So that's just one small example, but it really is dependent upon the size of the organization and those other factors as to what that role requires.
Yeah. And like, how about you talked a little bit about AI? Like, how is AI helping sales performance? And like, just some your observations. And then where is it kind of overhyped right now?
I think it helps. Well, what I hear a lot is that, it's going to replace us salespeople. And like, well, Amazon has already replaced transactional sales, right? If you're just trading widgets for dollars and all that matters is low price, Amazon has taken care of that. So I think if you're thinking about B2B or B2C, a complex sale, AI can help us be more efficient or more effective. Lots of ways to do that. So if you think about it this way, I'll give you an example that it's helpful and negative at the same time. It allows you to write better copy and edit video for social media to talk about your product, to talk about your service, to talk about your value. It allows you to do that more efficiently and more effectively. The caveat, right, or the downside of that, or the other side of the coin, is that it allows for a lot of slop. People can put out even more crap, right, onto social media, and we don't need more noise. We need more thoughtful content, more content that helps somebody understand the value that you provide, not just talking about the cute features and benefits that you have. So I think it can help us do better discovery. Right. If you can, we have a prompt that we use with clients that helps them put in four or five inputs and then kick out three or four pages of good research on the company that you're going to do first call with, and gives you some background to be able to ask better questions to dig deeper to make that decision maker, that buyer you're talking with, feel like you're asking better questions, right? And they lean into that. So That's a great way to use AI as a salesperson, but if you're just using it to kick out a bunch of content that's crap, you're making it worse.
And where do you think it's kind of overhyped?
It's like it's gonna replace us, and you're not needed anymore. I really think that's horseshit. Excuse the language.
Yeah, definitely. And what about, like, there's a lot of talk about, do you think AI can do the whole SDR job? Or, like, and if it's yes, but if it's no, like, what's the partial? Like, what could it do?
Well, there's a Cory Doctorow wrote a book called Enshittification, a word he developed, right? And he's talking about Amazon, Comcast, these large companies that started out caring about their customers, started out caring about their vendors. So they're using AI. You can't talk to a human in some of those roles, right? You got to talk to a bot to solve a problem. So I think it can help qualify people, but if somebody has a problem that needs to be solved, and from a customer service perspective, you need a human in that B2B space to or B2C to help them solve the problem. You want to do that quickly. That's how you gain loyalty. So it can help with gathering data and getting intel, so that CSR can call up and say, "Hey, Dean, I heard you had a bad experience with our service team. Tell me about it," right? And then they jump into solving that problem for them, where the salesperson, where the consumer or the buyer doesn't have to download all of the information that they should know, right? That's a way to set it up to be helpful. But just think about it from the perspective of when we're trying to deal with a big company who doesn't care about us anymore. Those are the things we want to avoid. And
Yeah, and like, I'm a little bit of a skeptic on, so like an S, so you have your SDRs making outbound and taking inbound and trying to qualify leads, so your AEs are spending more time on, quality opportunities. And a lot of people say, yeah, the SDR role, that being the SDR role, can be all automated by AI. And I'm a little bit of a skeptic on it. I think some of it can be automated, but not all of it. But, like, well, what's your point of view?
I really don't think you can replace that in all situations. It's specific. If you have a buyer who is concerned about specific issues, how do you get a robot, and I'm just going to use robot as a generic term, to make that call, right? It's good at responding to somebody raising their hand and doing a little bit of qualification, but it's not going to replace that seat. And I argue that there's a lot of people having an SDR role that isn't necessary to begin with.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And talk
Right?
about that. Like, what's an example of that? Why don't you need those, an SDR team or even a single SDR?
Well, if you have a hunter role as a salesperson, you need that salesperson to go engage with that client for that first time, right? And then they close the deal, and then they hand it off to an account manager or account executive, right? Using the terms. I think that is a more productive way in a B2B consultative sales scenario than doing the handoffs. Because every time the ball changes hands, it's a chance for a fumble, right? So if that business development role is truly get the deal in and close it, so that buyer doesn't have to go talk to two different people, and that handoff doesn't have to occur. You're more likely to get the win, and then make a nice traditional handoff to that account manager who's going to be with you long term, right?
Yeah, and in my example that I was trying to ask would be like, okay, like in software sales, like you'll have these SDR roles, which is not to close the deal, it's just to get a meeting for your AE.
Right.
Like, it's just they're just tasked with like getting meetings. And do you
It's
think that role is necessary, or like that's the role I'm kind of talking about a little bit,
you
like.
have to you'd have to convince me that it was really necessary, and that comp plan and that sales cycle warrants that, because you solve a problem and you create two other problems. I think with that, you know, because software sales, that what is that account executive going to do? They're not going to qualify that person. They're just going to go right to a demo, right? And there's where the problem lies. That SDR isn't qualifying. They're just trying to get the meeting. So where's the discovery done? There's a gap there. If you've trained your account executive to go through proper discovery, okay, maybe it works.
Yeah,
But
and you push the discovery down to the SDR too, like qualify,
now
discovery,
you've
move
just
it.
now you've hired a traditional business development rep. So why
Yeah.
not just let them do that and close the deal and then hand it off, right? Why
Yeah.
make your buyer go through that extra step?
Yeah. No, I'm a skeptic on it myself, but there's a lots of organizations set up that way, and that's why
Yeah,
I was
and
curious what your thoughts were there.
I somebody'd have to really, I mean, I know it works because there's a few companies that do it successfully, and I think that's a smaller percentage than, you know, if you really looked at it, another model might be more productive. I'm, you know, call me old school. I think of it as what is the buyer, you know, I think we should think of the buyer first in the process.
Yeah.
What are we putting them through? What are
Yeah,
we
I
asking
agree.
them to do? And if your model doesn't make that reduce the amount of resistance, you're going to struggle, and you're setting yourself up for failure.
So
And the ops is harder to do.
what are your thoughts around like our sales guys are like, yeah, I mean, I know we have to do outbound, but it's a waste of time. What are your thoughts around outbound for your sales team, and like, what are your thoughts around that versus warm leads coming in and
Well, I mean, would you like to date a pretty girl or a not pretty girl, right? I mean, come on, that's it's kind of like that. Can I get warm leads? That would be great. But I think you, I mean, I started in New York with a reverse directory after I went to a building to figure out who was in the building, and I would make those calls, right?
I
So,
love that. Yeah, but today these salespeople are kind of spoiled. They're like, yeah, I need leads. I need warm outbound leads. Like, I'm not getting enough leads in my pipeline to hit quota. And then they're like shifting the accountability, but like, okay, we're gonna give you warm leads, but you still gotta like have other actions to drive your pipeline. Like,
So then
what are your thoughts around all that? I think I know what they are, but
I
yeah.
go back to the sales role. What did we hire them to do? Did we
Yeah.
tell them up front that you're going to have to go get 90% of your leads yourself? Did we tell them we were going to give them 90% of their leads,
Yeah.
right? And if you tell them you're going to give them 90% and you don't have a lead gen machine that's going to keep spinning them opportunities, then you set them up for failure as a business owner. So what is it that we're trying to accomplish? And if you hired them, they get to say, I don't have enough leads, if you told them you were going to give them the leads. But
Yeah.
if you told them they had to go out and get them, and they tell you their job is hard, like, yeah, no kidding. It is a hard job. We told you that to begin with, right? So I'm an advocate on the front end of telling them how hard the job is. What's reality? What do you need to be good at? And you know, if you don't have that lead machine, that lead gen machine that's going to kick in leads, then you got to have somebody that's can open up the doors and create the relationship and close a deal. But even if you're generating 100 leads a month for 10 salespeople, right? And if that's appropriate, then are they closing those deals? What's the quality of that lead? What's their win rate? Are they letting deals? So when I see somebody getting 10 leads a month that they should close 70% of them, and they're only closing 20, we're wasting dollars on the lead gen,
Yeah.
right? Because we got the wrong person. If somebody gave me 10 leads a month, you know, my close ratio is decent. You know, it's in the 73% range. So I should be
Wow.
closing seven of those deals if they're qualified, right? So if you're giving people qualified leads and they're not closing them, That's the problem. But if you, what did you tell them you were going to do? If you told them you're going to give them enough leads, then you better damn well do that. And you better have that machine working. That's hard too. That's
Yeah.
really hard.
I mean, a lot of things too, though, is not like you have like high value leads, which maybe you can close at that ratio you talk about that are really qualified, and but then you're going to get other leads not at that high ratio to close, because that's just part of it. You know, they're like you're not always going to get like these high quality leads, but you're going to get like good leads, or and you have to work them all, right? I mean, I don't know.
So,
What's
I
your
mean,
point of view there?
you can have marketing qualified leads and you can have sales qualified leads. So somebody takes that marketing lead, they raised their hand, they opened up an article, they looked at something. Okay, that's not really sales quality yet. That means they've shown some interest. So somebody's got to check that out, make sure that they're serious or they're kicking tires, right? And if they're just kicking tires, that's not sales qualified. But if they're like, yeah, you know, we're in the market to do something here in the next 6 months, okay, then a salesperson should be able to go close that. So I look at leads that I'm talking to. I'm trying to figure out why they won't close a deal with me, why I'm not a good fit, right? And I'm not for everybody. So
Yeah.
I got to figure out, can I work with this person? Because what I do is kind of personal, right? I'm working with that CEO and we're going to spend time together. So when you're looking at the leads, you know, how are we defining them as leads? And are we giving them different numbers? And are we looking at it, you know, in going backwards and saying, you know, the quality of what's coming through is an MQL, not an SQL, marketing qualified, sales qualified. And you know what happens in that gap? So,
Yeah.
you know, that's a sales operations kind of a situation where marketing and sales got to, you know, play nice in the sandbox together.
Yeah, which is also another problem, but
It shouldn't be, but it often is.
often is. So if you are advising a CEO as you do, and they want to be more data driven, creating an accountable, scalable sales organization, like over the next 12 months for them, like what would you prioritize, like the first three things they should do, or the big prioritizations to do that?
Good question. I want to understand who's on their current team. So I want to
Okay.
understand and assess their skills. So I do an evaluation of the current team and of their sales organization. So I'm looking at the nuts and bolts. I'm looking at the person's ability, their skills, their mindset, right? So we assess that. And then we look at, in that assessment, is their process flawed? Right? Is their sales process flawed? Is their hiring process flawed? Right? So then we know, do they have the right messaging and positioning? Because if you ask five salespeople to describe their value or their unique mechanism, their unique value point, you ask five people, you might get six different answers.
Yeah.
Right? So there's a problem. They all need to be singing from the same hymnal. They all need to know who their target is. So again, we're going back. Looking at that, assessing that team, looking at the process to make sure it's right before we do anything, right? Somebody wants training, like, whoa, why do you want training? Let's talk about it. Make sure that what we're going to do is going to serve the needs. And they're often looking at a symptom rather than the root cause. And we've talked a lot about root causes. So that's really what we prioritize is where's the real problem? And let's go fix the real problem so you can stop fixing problems.
Yeah, good advice. Now, was there a question I didn't ask you that you wish I would have?
I think the you hit on the all of them. I think the sales hiring piece is making sure you're clear about what that person needs to do well every day, every week, and being brutally honest about what that is. And stop thinking that you need industry experience, right? This one thing will change people's success rate. Think about who your buyer is, and let's pretend it's a CFO. Who else calls on that CFO? What other companies, what other types of salespeople, what other products are they buying? Those industries, those salespeople should be the candidates you're looking at, as well as your industry experience. A lot of times you're going to get retreads in your industry. Retreads are, 2 years here, 18 months there. They're not going to help you. But if you find somebody that knows a CFO, they know the language, they might have a Rolodex full of CFOs, of people they know that they could call up and say, "Hey, I'm working for Dean now and I'm doing this. Can we have a conversation?" Right? You're off to the races because they already know your buyer. I think those two things, being honest about what you want them to do and being honest with yourself that you don't need industry experience.
That's great advice. That's really good advice. Yeah, I like that. Yeah, because too often, like even we're always hiring people in the industry, and you're right. I mean, it's really someone that who's our ICP or who's our target customer, and it doesn't matter what they're selling to them, though they understand them and have relationships.
You
That's
should be
really
able to
good.
teach them your product, right? Relatively quickly to understand what the pain points are that you solve and how to ask the right questions to get the strategy alignment with that buyer.
Yeah, good. That's really good advice. So,
Thanks.
Walter, how if people want to get in touch with you, how can they get in touch with you?
Really active on LinkedIn. So Walter L. Crosby on LinkedIn. I'm the only one in the sales space. And website helixsalesdevelopment.com.
Awesome. Hey, I learned a few things here. I really appreciate that, Walter. I love the common sense kind of way to get things done. And anyways, I appreciate the conversation. Thank you.
Thanks for having the opportunity. I appreciate it, Dean.
Hey, it's Dean Guida here. Thank you so much for tuning in to the AI Data-Driven Leadership Podcast, where we showcase the visionaries who are shaping the future with data and AI. If you're a successful leader, entrepreneur, or business professional and want to share your story on this program, we'd love to hear from you. Visit us at podcast.slingshotapp.io to apply. Got something value out of this interview? Share the love. Take a quick screenshot, post it to your favorite social platform, or text it to a friend. Don't forget to tag the show and use the hashtag AI Data Driven Leadership. I love seeing your posts and suggestions for future guests. And if you know someone who would make a great guest, let them know about the show. We're dropping new episodes regularly, so don't miss out. Hit subscribe wherever you listen, and if you enjoyed this episode, a quick thumbs up, rating, or review would mean the world to me and my team. Want to stay connected? Visit our website at podcast.slingshotapp.io or find me on LinkedIn at Dean Guida and Instagram at DeanGuida89. Thanks again for listening to the AI Data-Driven Leadership Podcast. We'll see you next time. Thank you.